Hello, and welcome to Generation Goat number 36. I am John Martin. With me, as always, E. Christopher Clark. Hey, Chris.
Hey, John.
We're back. Two months.
We were on a good run there for regularity, but...
It couldn't last. It just couldn't last. No. But 36, man. We're cruising right along.
Yeah. Maybe we'll hit 50 before we do.
Yeah, maybe. Place your bets, folks.
That'd be a good... Well, what would people win? You know, if they sort of, if somebody guessed,
we'll stop
what month and year. There you go.
Yeah, that'll work. Well, hey, what's been going on? It's been like 2 months of summer. I assume you've been doing stuff.
I've been trying. I did an evening of Grand Guignol. I think we kind of hinted at that.
It's true. I went. It was gory, and yeah,
it was gory.
Wasn't the most disturbing part. There was a lot of blood, and some of the blood was really funny, and some of the blood was kind of like, oh, that's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. But the one you were in, I think, actually was the scariest of the bunch, if only because it's been like 20 years, and I haven't heard you make sexy time noises before. And I was kind of hoping that run would continue.
But no, that wasn't me. That was another dude.
In a mask.
It was Spider Tebow, I think, was the actor we wrangled for that part.
Sure.
Yeah.
That was, I'm happy there was blood afterwards, honestly, to take my mind off.
The sexy time noises.
Yeah, it was disturbing.
I've got to say, the sexy time noises, during the rehearsal process for that show, because the sexy time happens right by a window in the theater, it's a closed off window,
nice.
But obviously the fact that it was a window at one point means that the barrier between it and the street, not so much. Apparently some people walked by during the rehearsal process, heard the sexy time, and applauded.
Nice.
They were like, and then another group of people at another time walked by and whispered to each other loudly right outside the actual window, there's people having sex in there.
Nice. You guys should put a sign up if this theater's a rockin'. That's nice. Yeah, well, you know what they say about theater folk.
Although it's never been true for me. I think we've talked about this probably at length. But
yeah, you're the guy.
I'm the guy who's never had the sexy time with the theater folk.
Designated virgin.
Yeah. I mean, I was also the guy who was always sober at cast parties for the longest time. So
you think there was one of those, like, back in the day at like orgies, like the designated virgin who would just be there to like keep everything running and like get everybody.
There had to be. I mean, there has to be somebody. You think they went so far as to get a eunuch? You
know, I don't know. Just like one dude who was there just to help out. You know, but he wasn't like
Help out too much.
Yeah, he wasn't going to like get in on anything. He was just going to make sure everything was running okay, get lots of wine. We should check with the Waysiders.
What happened to those guys? Anyway, I mean, I don't want to spend too much time doing it, but what the hell else are we going to spend time talking about? I know they recorded a couple episodes, and just those episodes just seem to have never come out. I don't get it.
I don't know. Well, you know, one of them moved to Michigan.
Yeah.
Too cool for us now.
Yeah.
They may not even have the internet in Michigan.
That's true. That's true. I've heard that rumor. You know what else I heard today? I'm Googling now to make sure did you know that Tony Scott, the director?
I saw that.
He jumped off a bridge.
I can't believe it. It's always weird to me when people in like their 60s commit suicide, because you're like, you managed to get that far, dude. Like, how did you manage to get that far if this is how you felt?
Well, we went back and forth between being really kind of shocked, because people at the salt mine today were kind of like really respectful of some of the work he's done.
Sure.
But also, I mean, there are too many opportunities to make fun. You know, there were Top Gun jokes, writing checks his body couldn't cash, and it's just really bad things.
Yeah.
I keep
waiting for a news outlet to slip and like show his picture and then play the scene where Goose dies in Top Gun.
Yes. Well, and we were saying, you know, maybe we all need to rise and stand at attention for the Top Gun theme. And then you think, like, he did tons of other work. Why is that the only thing? I mean, I'm looking.
Crimson Tide, Enemy of the State.
Last Boy Scout, True Romance. Yeah. Like, Quentin Tarantino apparently at one point said that he favored Tony as opposed to Ridley.
Yeah.
Taken with Pelham 1-2-3. Beverly Hills Cop 2, apparently. Yeah.
Theme song that's still stuck in my head.
But now apparently they're saying that he may have had inoperable brain cancer and that might have been the reason.
See, that's the only time it kind of makes sense to me. Like, on the other end of that, it's like, well, if I had a terminal illness and I were old, I'd be okay with it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can kind of see both perspectives, you know. On the one hand, you don't want to suffer. You'd rather just get it over with. But on the other hand, I mean,
our listeners are like, amen, brother.
Yes, they are. So I don't know. The way that rumors, to get back to like hearing rumors, I heard the way that stuff progresses throughout the day is always interesting when that sort of thing happens. You know, at the beginning, it was just he jumped off a bridge. And then, you know, eventually the brain cancer thing came out, and then it'll be some other damn thing. It'll be Mitt Romney and his jackass sidekick saying that Barack Obama was responsible for
cancer. I mean, if Tony Scott had had that brain cancer in Romney's America, he would have been dead already.
Yeah. True that.
So,
One of them didn't. No, it wasn't them. It was it was Dave Mustaine from
Jesus Christ.
The guy who was kicked out of Metallica. There, I'm pissing off some Megadeth fans somewhere.
Well, he was.
But apparently, he had a conspiracy theory that he let loose that Barack Obama was responsible for the shootings in Colorado? The ones
in
the
Batman Aurora, from Colorado.
Jesus. I don't even know what to say.
I mean, Dave Mustaine is, you know, a pretty reputable source too. I mean, it's, you know, come on, how long has he been in Megadeth? I mean, let's be honest, you know. But holy God, you know, I just, what is that even coming up for at his concert?
I don't. Did he? Was it at a concert?
Yeah, there's a YouTube clip of it. It's like, what, you're in the middle of your set and you're like, all right, I just want to bring it down for a minute and talk about how the president had a bunch of people shot in a theater so he could take your guns away. Right. All right, now who's ready to rock? You know, like, yeah. That's a really good way to lose, you know, an audience. And we would know. We're a generation goat.
Yeah. We are the master. We've got a master's degree in losing audience members.
Three of them. Yeah. So. Yeah.
Sorry, dude. Damn it! I lost it. It was something to do with
that
what we were just talking about.
Mustaine is how it's done.
Politics and music.
Right.
That just not things that should go together. And the next most recent case in point, this notion of what the hell is the Republican VP's name?
Paul Ryan.
That Paul Ryan's favorite band is Rage Against the Machine.
Sure it is. although it proves what we were saying in the 90s all along, that they're popular with rich white suburban kids.
There you go. And of course, Tom Morello.
Yeah.
Came out and
as far away on the political spectrum as you can.
What the hell did Tom Morello and what did he say? Ryan. He said it was amusing what's the quote? I can't find it. Anyway, he thought it was amusing.
This is like the episode where your dad tells jokes and he forgets all the punchlines.
Yeah, and laughs at them anyway.
It was funny anyway. You gotta be there.
Yeah. But speaking of rumors,
back to Fleetwood Mac again.
No. I'm gonna not lose any of my cred yet. I heard a rumor that, you know, we were just talking about Batman, and the shooting in Colorado. But I heard a rumor that you have not seen The Dark Knight.
I haven't seen The Dark Knight Rises yet. I've been wanting to go since it opened. I've been going crazy. And Nora, my fiance, is in town and she's bat blocking me.
Why is she bat blocking?
She's like, oh, well, I didn't really like the last one. It was kind of not my type of movie, but we could go. I'm like, well, I don't really want to go with someone who's going to sit there for 2 hours and 40 minutes and be like, can we go? So I kept hoping you would like come back from salt mine training or something. I could be like, dude, Dark Knight again.
Yeah. Well, dude, if you've, I know you got a busy week, but if you've got time over the next couple days, I'll do it.
I will work on that. But yeah, so far I've had it gloriously not spoiled for me. Mm. I nearly accidentally spoiled it for myself. I was reading some website and was like, you know, Joseph Gordon-Levitt reveals what's behind that crazy Batman ending. And like, the reason I clicked on it rather than clicking the next thing.
No, like, don't do that.
No.
I will not spoil it. I will say I enjoyed it, which I think would be indicated by the fact that I'm willing to go again. What was really interesting for me following the people that I follow online was the very different reactions of a couple of of geeky friends, like people who I really respect their level of geekery. Mm. Jamie Bradley, who we've talked about on the podcast in the past, hated it, like loathed it. Whereas Todd Hunter, who I don't think I've talked about here, but Todd was the second camera person on the Nice and Round video that we shot with my friend Sean Baptiste.
Everyone knows who that is.
Yeah. Oh yeah. But Todd is also a pretty well-known actor in Portsmouth. Anyway, so I think Todd really liked it. Jamie hated it. Usually I think they come in with similar opinions on stuff like that. So I was really interested to see that anybody hated it. I dug it. So
cool.
Yeah.
We did go see Spider-Man together.
We
were doing stuff, which you ended up liking despite thinking you were going to hate it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I've been proven wrong.
It was pretty great.
It was pretty amazing. I think,
boom,
boom.
See what you did there?
I did. Sure. I do see what I did there. I feel like I've said this, but I guess we saw it after that we did the last podcast. So, You sure?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I thought there was more emotion in the scenes surrounding Uncle Ben's death, which is about 5-10 minutes, than there was in all three of Raimi's movies. Like, and I think the comparison we made was that now what we realize is that we liked Raimi's movies if we liked them, because they were all we had, in the same way that we liked Tim Burton and Joel Schumacher's Batman movies.
Well, let's not go that far.
Okay, we like Tim Burton's Batman.
Yeah, movie. We can stop there.
Because they were all we had.
Bat credit cards, bat nipples, Mr. Freeze. We can stop there.
We can stop there. Didn't he do? Did he? Who was the one? Who did the middle one? Because there was Batman and Batman Returns.
Right.
And then there was the Val Kilmer one, which wasn't terrible. And then there was the last one. Batman Forever. That's the Val Kilmer one. That one wasn't terrible. Batman and Robin, let's not talk about it.
To the Wikipedia machine.
No.
Those movies, before Chris Nolan came along, I really just didn't care.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I just couldn't do it. All right. Yeah. Batman in film. Hmm. So we've got Tim Burton for the first one, obviously. Burton again for Batman Returns, Schumacher for Batman Forever, and Schumacher for Batman and Robin with George Clooney.
It feels like, based on what I know about Schumacher from other films and from Batman and Robin, like it felt like somebody was there to rein him in on Batman Forever, and then that was whatever that was gone. I don't know. Holy rusted metal Batman.
Indeed.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm very happy with the way Spider-Man turned out, and now we have a whole new slew of Marvel movies to look forward to.
Yes, and they've contracted. This is big news. It happened while I was on vacation. They got Joss Whedon under contract through 2015.
Yep.
So he's going to have, if I understand it correctly, he's going to have a crack at the scripts for everything that's coming down the pipe, and then he'll write and direct Avengers 2.
That's pretty great, which has a release date, which escapes me at the moment, but there
I think
is
it's
a release
2015.
Date.
I think you've got next year, what have you got? Next year you've got Thor and Thor 2. No, not Thor 2. It's Thor the Dark. That's happened too, I think, since the last time we talked. Every one of them has some sort of, or maybe not. Maybe that was earlier.
Captain America 2 is the Winter Soldier, I think.
Yeah, which relates to a pretty popular storyline from recent years. And then, so I think the order is Thor 2, just for lack of, because I don't know what the subtitle is. And then Guardians of the Galaxy, which sounds interesting.
Mm.
It sounds like they're going to be on the run with some object that everybody in the universe wants. So Infinity Gauntlet.
I mean, it's made two appearances practically. So
yeah.
Yeah.
So you've got that, and then you've got oh, wait a minute.
No, Guardians is last.
Guardians,
Thor,
is
then Cap.
Iron Man's is next.
Right.
Is this summer. Iron Man and Thor are next summer, and then Cap and Guardians are 2014, and then Avengers is 2015.
Theoretically, in there you could squeeze in, because they have said there's one other project they're thinking about, the much discussed, yet I know not why, Ant-Man film.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I can think of is as a way to bring in more people for Avengers 2.
Yeah, but Honey, I Shrunk the Avengers.
Right? Yeah, I don't really. I don't get it. I've never understood the appeal of Ant-Man.
I don't get it. Like, and they said it's actually going to be kind of a comedy, and it's kind of like, well, no.
Yeah.
Unless you get Rick Moranis to do it.
Yeah. Get Rick Moranis out of mothballs.
Yeah, just, no.
Yeah, I don't get it. But, I mean, we've got all of those, and then we've got the news that Fox is going to give up the rights to Daredevil, which I think is interesting. They had, like, until October something to get something in production to retain the rights, and they're not going to. They've pretty much said the rights are going to go back to Marvel, which could be really interesting, because now, if you like the sort of more urban heroes, because now Marvel has the rights to the Punisher, and Marvel has the rights to Daredevil.
Yeah.
And these are characters they sort of sometimes lump together. Yeah, it could be interesting. Neither one of them are Avengers, so
can't be worse than they've done so far with those two characters.
Yeah, no.
Just please don't get Ghost Rider in there. We'll be okay.
But Fox is putting out The Wolverine, which is supposed to be a solo, not as many mutants, all set in Japan. Story for him, which could be interesting.
There are some good Japanese, storylines over the years with
and then apparently I don't know if this is official, but I thought I saw somewhere that the X-Men First Class sequel is actually now titled X-Men Days of Future Past, which either very cool or very problematic.
If they do it right, I'm happy. If it turns into X-Men 3, I'm gonna punch someone in the neck.
Well, see, and I think they've got an awesome guy at the helm. They've got the same guy back, I think.
Yeah.
But the problem is, I thought when I read the description, it was something along the lines of somebody hinted at, or maybe they were just speculating, the idea that it would link the two well, not that there are separate timelines, but link the First Class more with the first three movies. I think it was mostly somebody speculating.
Let's hope that guy's an idiot.
But I can see a rationale for wanting to explain why there are certain things that are different about the timelines.
I guess.
But I think it might also be a way to bring in some of the actors or some of the characters even from the other, the other franchise. I mean, if you could get Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart, if it was that, or are they both dead? I don't know. It's been a long time since I read Days of Future Past. Curious to see. I mean,
Professor X is dead, and Magneto is part of the uprising.
Okay. So it would be interesting. I mean, what makes it potentially good and potentially easier to turn into a good movie is that it's only a two-issue storyline, as opposed to Dark Phoenix and or just the Phoenix Saga, any of those things they've tried to compress into one movie. Yeah. This is two issues. But the other problem is, are they just borrowing the name because it's catchy?
No. I saw an interview. It really is going to be that story.
So. But they don't have Kitty. Isn't Kitty being projected into the future part of the...
That's a pretty easy storytelling fix.
Yeah.
Hey, where'd you come from? Over there. Anyway, hi.
But, I mean, they do have a Kitty in the...
Yeah.
So I wonder if they use some... It's probably not important that it's Kitty Pryde. It's just that it's a younger person...
We'll be okay.
...going into the future.
But, yeah, it's a good couple of years for comic book movies, I think, coming up. Which is great, because if you had told a younger me that comic book movies would one day be good, I would have not believed you.
Yeah, remind me, I want to come back to the one possible exception to that. But what did we have, even? I remember the terrible Fantastic Four movie that, like, wasn't even released, and it was, like, was it Roger Corman?
Yeah.
And there was talk of somebody at the store getting a bootleg of it, but I don't know if I ever saw it. So we had that. We had the Dolph Lundgren Punisher.
Yeah.
What else did we have to go on? I mean, Superman, certainly. And the...
Yeah. And the three sequels.
To speak of.
Yeah. No, not really. I mean, we had not comic book. We had a lot of cartoon movies. I mean, there was the awful He-Man movie, for instance. And,
yeah. Yep.
The Conan movies. Which are novels / comics.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so I was going to say the one potential exception to the, like, a good year, couple years for comic book movies. Have you seen the trailer for Man of Steel?
Yeah.
Okay. If you have no idea who's been cast as Superman and you approach that trailer, do you have any notion who the fisherman is? Like, that's most of that trailer?
You got me.
Like, if you don't enter into that trailer knowing that Henry Cavill is playing Superman, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
It's a DC movie about fishermen?
Yay.
Okay. I mean, you do have... the voiceover, which helps, but you're still not sure, like, why is this person talking about Superman while we're watching a movie about, you know, Deadliest Catch? Or
yeah, is the Crocodile Hunter in this movie?
I don't know.
I thought that dude was dead. Crikey.
Yeah, I just don't get it.
Is Crocodile Hunter gonna make Superman mad by sticking fingers in him?
But you know, so comic book movies, mostly positive. What about the other geeky movie news that's happened recently, where there was going to be a movie that was going to be two movies, and now it's going to be three?
I'm psyched. Peter Jackson could film anything. He could film a documentary on Hobbit cooking, and I would watch it.
And no doubt there will be a documentary on the inevitable, like, extended edition about Hobbit.
I'm actually really happy about it. I think, you know, with the way that they've built that script, you know, at first it's like, oh, but The Hobbit is, like, it's kind of lighter and it's kind of a kid's book. So
yeah,
are you even making two movies? And you have to tell people, like, this isn't Harry Potter 7. Like, there's actual stuff. And, yeah, sorry. 200 pages of yelling intense just didn't do it for me. But sorry, everybody out there. But I mean, with the way that they're bringing in, you know, the appendices from The Lord of the Rings and the appendices from The Hobbit, plus a lot of unfinished tales and, you know, other kind of related material, like, it's very easy to make a big world in which The Hobbit is taking place. And I think it's going to be great. And, you know, I think it will bridge very nicely with the original in a way that, you know, say George Lucas never could. So,
yeah. Well, and it's, yeah, I mean, they've got quality source material to go back to, which certainly helps.
Yeah.
And they've got somebody who knows what they're doing at the helm, which helps. So is there really that? I mean, I think I've confessed. I mean, you know, I haven't read the books. So
there's a lot of other stuff. Yeah.
And do you see, I mean, Do you see how they're going to connect the two things?
Well, even in the trailer, it looks like they're building up the storyline of what Gandalf does when he's apart from them. Because if you remember The Hobbit, Gandalf is kind of away for a while. Right. And he's like, I've got some stuff to do. You bitches are crowding me. And he goes, and he's like off doing stuff. Well, what he's doing during that time, there's another council of the wizards, and he goes because he hears reports of stuff going on in Mirkwood.
Right.
Which is actually, it's Sauron doing stuff.
Right. And I think you told me one, is he the necromancer?
The necromancer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so Gandalf is kind of pursuing that storyline. And there's a lot of stuff that goes on, including Saruman starting to go bad.
Mm-hmm.
So, but also they're bringing in the character Radagast. Radagast is another wizard. He's the brown wizard, and he's kind of a hippie. Radagast is kind of useless, as things go, because all the wizards, originally there were five, and they were all sent here to, like, help the world and, like, keep it good and make people, you know, well. So they get here, and there are two blue wizards who just, like, piss off immediately. They're like, we're going east. See you guys later.
Yeah.
And that's it. They're gone. Bye. See ya. Saruman and Gandalf kind of do their... what they were sent to do for a while. Radagast decides that he's going to look after, like, trees and plants and rocks and squirrels and stuff. So he goes and he lives in this little hippie commune place. And so they're bringing him back into it. Radagast is kind of unimportant, except for the footnote that he teaches Saruman how to use the birds and stuff as his spies, which, of course, is very big later on.
Right, yeah.
But he's also inadvertently the guy who teaches Gandalf how to call the eagles to save him. So it's kind of funny subplot. But I imagine that the whole, like, storyline of the wizards and what they're doing will be developed in parallel to The Hobbit.
Right.
So so there's all that stuff. And then, of course, there's what's going... Later, you can start doing what's going on with Aragorn in between things and that sort of thing. And then, of course...
Do you think they'll be able to get Viggo, or have they already said that they've gotten Viggo?
I don't think they've said it, but I would imagine if there were a part, they would. I don't think as of yet there was. But, I mean, yeah, so Peter Jackson apparently decided at the beginning of July that he was going to do this. Mm-hmm. And according to what I read, he went back to the cast, and within a week, everybody was like, yep, we'll do it. So... I have every confidence. I think
so. Would the story, I mean, obviously you don't know, but would the story end in the same place? It's just that the middle is being expanded, or do you think that
it's tough to say. I mean, there was a thing that was floating around in the internet last month, which was pointing out that, or maybe early this month, that was pointing out that, you know, New Line had registered a bunch of new domain names, and the titles were kind of suggestive of, you know, the movie ending with the Hobbit ending. But my feeling is that, much like the first trilogy, the story will end in the third movie, and then there'll be, you know, a transition built into it where it's kind of, this is where everybody goes and this is what happens and that kind of thing. So
I'm very interested, and I think my initial reaction was, no, I wasn't even negative. My initial reaction was, oh. And then I was like, yeah. And it kind of got more positive the more it went on, because it felt like, you know, there's a reason that a three-act structure exists, right? Like, beginning, middle, and end is what we want. And
thanks, the idea Aristotle.
The idea of a two-part this, you know... the moment I sort of reconcile, I was like, yeah, it makes sense. Put a third one in there, expand the story. It's certainly, you know, he certainly is capable of putting together long, interesting stuff, and maybe long, not so interesting stuff. I don't know. How do you feel about King Kong and the Lovely Bones, if you saw it?
I actually never saw the Lovely Bones. King Kong was a little uneven.
Yeah.
I mean, it starts off interesting enough, and you're like, oh, this could be good, and then it's just kind of a, right, it's going to be 2 hours of, what do we do? He's too dangerous, and yet gentle, and yet dangerous, and yet gentle.
Gentle.
And I think actually that might be a problem with the source material more than the adaptation.
Right,
it's
yeah.
just kind of a, all right.
Yeah.
We've seen the big monkey climb the skyscraper. What's wrong with their lives? That was your cue to say King Kong's a member of the Great Ape family. Anyway, I don't know. I'm looking forward to it, and I have no worries. I think it'll be great. So, yeah, it'll be an interesting few years for geeks. And the Wachowski brothers have a new movie coming out.
Who's in that? Because I initially was like, eh. And then I saw some combination of like a cast list, and I was like, I really should go watch that trailer.
Yeah, and I don't remember the cast exactly, but the trailer looks promising, and the early reviews of the movie are like, wow, this is really great. This is a return to form.
Yeah. What have they done since the Matrix stuff? They've done something in the middle, right?
There was something else. There was the stupid movie with all the Guy Fawkes masks. Sorry. Oh, okay.
No. That V for Vendetta. Did they do that? Yeah, which is another comic book movie. Does it seem like there was a lull there for a while? Because there was like a great geek period earlier, in the last 10 or 15 years, and then everyone went off and I mean, like when Lord of the Rings was coming out, and the middle part of the Harry Potter series was really good. I actually like all of them, but around that time that Lord of the Rings was finishing up, there was the third Harry Potter movie, which is still probably the best. Like there was a lot of good stuff coming out there. And then Peter Jackson went and did some weird stuff. You know, the Matrix movies got terrible. And they stopped doing cool stuff. I don't know. I guess it never totally tapered off, but now it seems like we are getting another good couple of years of awesome.
Yeah, I don't know. The Wachowskis did have a bit of a break there for a while. I'll go see the new movie, I'm sure, because the trailer does look good and the reviews are quite good. But
yeah,
I'm not sure I would commit to a multi-part series with them again soon.
Yeah, you've been burnt once.
And you know, the thing is, like, I did watch the second Matrix movie recently, and for most of it, you can kind of be like, all right. As long as there's a strong ending, we're going to be okay. Because some of these new characters are kind of interesting. And okay, sure. But oh, that third movie. Just, ouch.
Yeah.
It's like the pretentious dude in your philosophy class was like, I'm going to write a great movie. And I'm going to put huge speeches in it because everyone likes those.
Yeah, everyone does. Well, yeah, that's something I certainly struggled with when I was writing back, well, it was before that time period, but I wrote a really good first thing in A Lick and a Promise back in college. And then when I had to do my senior project, I was like, oh, everyone liked my really great 45-minute play. I'm going to write an amazingly, you know, preachy hour and a half play now and try to get all of my atheist points of view out there. And,
randomly. I was in it.
And you probably had to spout some of my terrible dialogue.
Undoubtedly. it's tough. I mean, like, there's always that, I think whenever you're writing anything, you know, there's always something in the back of your head that's like, oh, writing should be about something. It should be important.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't mean you. I mean, like, people, you know. And,
right.
Like, I think that the skill that people I know who write really well eventually learn to have is, you know, letting stuff speak for itself, or being comfortable with the fact that this is not going to change the world, but it is good, you know, on its own.
So what do you think keeps somebody like, well, what separates someone like a lot of things, but Tolkien, right? Writes The Hobbit, then goes on and writes Lord of the Rings and writes a lot of other stuff that maybe is or is not up to the same level. But generally speaking, has a good success, goes on, has a great, writes something amazing, but doesn't go so far into the, like, oh, people thought I was amazing the first time out, I'm going to do this. From somebody like Terry Brooks, who writes, you know, passable, like, three-volume thing in The Sword of Shannara, then a pretty passable 4 or 5-volume follow-up, and now just can't stop writing these
dudes. Well, it's the Robert Jordan Pierce Anthony problem in that regard too, mm-hmm. right? Like originally the Wheel of Time, the Robert Jordan series, was supposed to be 6 books.
Yeah. And now it's what, 13?
Yeah, and you know, unfortunately he died before he could finish, but I mean
right.
wouldn't have. I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, for someone like Tolkien, he wrote for his own amusement, you know. I mean, the fact of the matter is, it was his side gig, you know, and he obviously, you know, really enjoyed the act of creating worlds and creating languages and creating alternative history, as it were. And, you know, it amused him, but he was never under any pressure from, you know, the Unwin folks, the publishers, to follow up. Right. So, and actually it's kind of fun when you look at different drafts of The Lord of the Rings and how many different configurations the characters end up in. And you know, it's just like, clearly it amused him. And I think that's really what it is. Like, you know, the best writers, I think, are the ones that don't care if people love them or if they get published, because they have something they want to say and they're going to say it exactly the way they want to say it, however long that takes. So I mean, I think there's that, you know. I mean, it's funny because Stephen King has that really great book on writing, and you know, there's lots of great advice in there for writers, and a lot of his early books, or even a few of the later ones, you know, are really excellent. But on the other hand, you know, there's so much drag, and it's like he's got it in his head that he should just keep publishing, like, even if it isn't good, you know. Yeah. In the way that, like, writers are like, oh, I should just write every day, even if I don't write anything good. Like,
yeah,
it's like, I must publish for 6 months.
Maybe you should write every day, but you shouldn't necessarily not show everyone
at all. It's a little weird. So I don't know. Yeah, and it must have been so weird, too, to be Tolkien, because his peers at Oxford did not respect him for his fiction at all. I mean, even now, it's kind of common in the faculty at Oxford, because, you know, I was there for a little bit, and for people to be like, oh, well, I wouldn't use that source because it's by Tolkien. He just makes stuff up when he wants to, you know. And the funny thing about that is that, like, three of the set texts on that course were either the glossary was all done by Tolkien or the translation was all done by Tolkien. And I did have a tutor one day who was like, oh, you can't quote that article because, you know, that's Professor Tolkien and, you know, he has all these flights of fancy. So, you know, and I said, but the three books we used were all done by Tolkien. And they were like, oh, well, I'll reassign something next time. So it must have been really awkward, you know, to be having this success. And even during his lifetime, you know, first translations were made into other languages. He helped with two of them. He helped with a German one and a Finnish one. And yet to get no respect for that. So it must have been, you could see in a situation like that, it'd be really tempting to embrace, like, your audience, to feel validated, but clearly he didn't need to. So, I don't know. Pretty great guy.
Yeah, I don't know. Those are books I know I need to get to at some point, and yet I look up at this bookshelf above my desk and see stuff that's been sitting there for 6 months, a year, couple years.
I hear you. I've had the same 4 books by my bed for like a year and a half now.
It's ridiculous. I and you think it's like, this is one of the things I love to do. Why don't I just sit down and give myself a couple of hours a day? Well, I don't have a couple of hours. Why don't I just sit down and give myself half an hour a day?
Well, I mean, you are really busy, but it is true. Like, I mean, to be a writer, like, you really do have to keep reading just as much as you write, if you can, you know, but obviously.
It would help to write too.
I haven't said a single word about our script, sir.
I have a plan for a novel revision that I've been planning. And so there's a lot of planning involved. And most of it is not, most of it is a reconfiguration. So I can kind of understand why I haven't written and I'm giving myself a pass.
Mm-hmm.
But for almost since the end of Grand Guignol, which is almost, is it a month ago?
Yeah, a little more.
It's been a while. Yeah, you know, I sort of sit there and I think I've had this plan for so long. Why have I not executed on it? Yeah. But
it's tough. Time gets away from you.
It does.
Yeah. Speaking of things that I spent time on, I saw Springsteen last week.
Did you really?
Dude is 62 years old. He played a 4-hour concert and he never stopped. Like, there were 30-second pauses in like 2 or 3 songs.
Mm.
It was just like super energy the whole time. It was crazy.
I heard from someone else who went to one of the shows this past week who said that he just kept doing encore after encore after encore.
4 of them. And he just kept going. And it was awesome. There was a nice Johnny Pesky tribute because, of course, Johnny Pesky passed away on Monday. So that was nice. Some people had put a wreath around his number 6 out in right field, which was kind of nice. And so that was cool. There was a nice photo slideshow of him during one of the songs, and they had spotlight on the pole for a while. And it was cool. So it was a nice, touching tribute. But yeah, the concert was. It's funny when it says like starts at 6:30 and there's no opening act.
Right.
But yeah, it was like 3 hours and 42 minutes or something, but still, dude's 62 years old.
Yeah. I mean, so does he do a lot of extended versions of things, or, cause I remember live.
Yeah. I mean a few, right? Yeah. Like they're very much like, the live album that you've heard, but, no, I mean, some of them are the appropriate length. I mean, it was a lot of songs. It was, it was a lot. But there's a lot of, like, I guess there is a bit of extension. There's kind of some goofing around with the audience and getting the audience to sing a lot. And that's the one thing, like, Springsteen fans, like, are diehard. Mm. I mean, you know, like, cuts that are from, like, the 70s that are not the popular cuts.
Right,
like, at all the right moments, you see the hand in the air and like everybody just shouting it out. And it's like the sea of people doing it. And you're just like, wow, it's got to be the most dedicated fans outside of Rocky Horror.
Yeah. He's somebody I've never, not until the last few years, paid as much attention to as everyone else. But, I knew the popular things. And I knew how good he was, but only the last few years have I really explored it.
Well, there was that kind of weird down period, which coincided with like the time that you would have been a teenager. Like my dad loved Springsteen, so I grew up with tons of it. But like if it had been the point where I was like 13 and that awful, awful 2 album set he put out, with the 57 channels and nothing on and all that crap, where he was like being experimental in the early 90s. I would have thought he was the biggest clown in the universe.
Well, I don't think it was ever so much that I thought he was the biggest clown in the universe, just in that way that like he wasn't relevant. Maybe it means I'm very cold hearted, but I never really dug the Streets of Philadelphia song. Like at the time that didn't work for me, but now I kind of like it.
But on the other hand, I don't think you could have grown up in the 80s in America and not have, you know, some affection for things off the Born in the USA album.
Like, oh yeah,
pretty much impossible. Like
I love
start playing and not be like, hey.
Yeah, that whole album is fantastic. But that I think is what I mean by like I sort of stuck with that one, with Born in the USA, and didn't really expand much beyond that until the sort of more recent renaissance after that down period.
I can't believe that album's as old as it is too. Like.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 28 years old.
I can't believe
28, dude.
I can't believe so many things are as old as they are.
This is as old as my fiance.
Wow.
Yeah.
I did not know how old she was. Yeah. Or maybe I did, but I forgot.
And
I can't believe
distance and 2 good years left.
I can't believe we're as old as we are.
I know, right?
I am old enough that if I had chosen to, I could have run for president this year.
Nice.
Yeah.
You were thinking about it a couple years ago.
I know.
I took some promo photos and
I found those when I was cleaning out. I was reorganizing my old computer to get ready to move to this new computer. Didn't want to take over any garbage really. And didn't want to take over stuff that I had like multiple copies of. So I was going through stuff and I found the Earl for America.
Nice.
Photo shoot, and They were
the only time I know of that you voluntarily called yourself Earl.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Mm.
When I went to go pick up this computer, it was sent to the store under the name of Earl. And yeah, there are people there who know me, and they said, Earl.
Did you just tell them, like, actually, it's a thing, it's a legal thing?
Yeah.
It's fine. I'm going to go back to work now.
Yeah.
Any cops show up? That's funny. But we have a better photo of you, actually. We have a photo of you from the salt mine.
We do, yeah. I was
with the podcast.
You mentioned earlier, you know, that I was training for a new position at the salt mine. They're going to let me run the elevator now.
Except the one that brings the salt. No, because, oh, right, you guys flood the underground thing and then the salt evaporates. Is that how you do it?
Yes.
Right, so the elevator is just to go up and down, the people to go up and down.
Just wanted to
be clear.
Yeah, no, so they're going to let me run that now. Nice. But I was out there for training. It took a week to learn that. We got a picture of me in front of the big pile of salt.
It's pretty awesome, dude.
It was pretty awesome. I was pleased.
Nice. So the elevator.
Yeah.
Do you have to run it from the top or the bottom? Because, like, I would think any position at the salt mine where you could stay above ground would be pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, that one is one level above me. There's one person at the bottom, one person at the top. I'm not, you know, yet sort of above ground operator.
Like, above your mining clothes, do you wear, like, one of those red jackets with the gold epaulets and, like, the little hat from, like, a bellhop in the 20s to run the elevator? Or...
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. That's part of the appeal.
Nice. That's pretty sweet. I bet Stephanie digs that a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe everybody likes a guy in uniform. Yeah. Even if it is a bellhop's uniform.
Bellhop, yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Uniform is uniform.
I've often wondered about the etymology of the word bellhop, but now we're getting a little too far in a free speech. Anyway, so I've been doing that, and you've been at Salt Mine, but you've also been thinking about moving your blog, because apparently my hosting sucks.
Well, I wasn't going to say anything. No.
My free hosting? That
your free hosting. Well, so...
Apparently, yeah. You're not getting value for free.
I, as some people know who've been listening for a long time, I've run my blog on this thing called Expression Engine, which is a pretty cool engine. It is a paid thing. Pay once up front and then do what you will. I've liked it. I kind of went down a different path. Maybe let's back up a step here.
All right.
We both blogged early on, probably in the sort of manual mode of just sort of doing like one-off HTML pages and posting them up. But then pretty quickly, I think both of us moved to the system Gray Matter. I know I used it. I think you used it. After Gray Matter, I moved to P Machine, which was free at the time. And P Machine could import from Gray Matter. And I don't think if WordPress existed, it wasn't,
WordPress was a fork originally of, Gray Matter, I think. No, of Movable Type. There was some interaction between the communities.
Yeah. So like Movable Type was out there, but Movable Type I think was always paid. Right. And I saw that P Machine had a paid product, but I kind of went in this direction and I forget exactly why, but I went in a P Machine direction. Where did you go after Gray Matter?
I think pretty much straight to WordPress. I think I might have dabbled with some other stuff, but pretty much straight to WordPress. And I still have all that old blog saved, but for various political reasons and the tedium of keeping it up, I just kind of took it down. But one day it will reemerge.
Right? Sure.
But yeah.
So you went one path and I went another path, and then you progressed down the WordPress path, which has treated you well. And I never really got into it. And I went down this P Machine path, and then P Machine invented this new thing, Expression Engine, which I went down, and it's always treated me well. I got used to that. I got used to the logic of the system and so on and so forth. And I stayed with it. I worked at a place for 3 months a few years ago where I had to learn WordPress, and it was okay, but it wasn't my thing. And I realize it's everyone else's thing. And
well, the problem for you is that you were using WordPress before version 3, and version 3, is a huge leap in terms of both, you know, user experience and in terms of standards. I mean, everything I do is standards compliant now, and it's actually pretty straightforward.
Yeah. So I stuck with Expression Engine for better or worse, and spent a lot of time working around things.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of time on back-end stuff. And I've mentioned the podcast that I listen to on the 5x5 network, and they've been talking up Squarespace for a long time, sponsor. But they've also been talking up, you know, these are guys who built CMSs from scratch, who've worked with all of these things. And they're talking about the fact that, like, that's not what they want to do so much anymore.
Right.
And that resonated with me. It's like, I'm not building things from scratch, but I'm pretty close to building things from scratch as I'm sitting here and trying to figure out all the various configurations that are going to make my site go. And I was just like, you know, what I really want to do is write.
Mm-hmm.
What I really want to do is blog. And I have very bad habits that I have to be aware of. And one of my very bad habits is that I will tinker and tinker and tinker, and not put anything out. And then when I see the opportunity to tinker some more, I'll go and I'll start tinkering rather than continuing to produce content, for lack of a better word. So I looked at Squarespace and I said, you know, in terms of the look and feel of the site, they had some templates I liked, which you mentioned looked like they were pretty much cribbed right off of WordPress.
They look very familiar, which is fine because I like WordPress. And, you know.
But so they had some templates with built-in mobile themes. Mobile themes have been a big thing for me because in addition to being standards compliant, I want my stuff to look pretty good on mobile devices. So I was looking at it, I was like, all right, well, this is pretty easy to use. So I said, all right, I'll sign up for the 2-week trial. And I did, and I built something I was pretty happy with in just a couple of days and started importing content. And I was like, you know what? Once I get past the tedium of importing content and start writing new content, this is going to be a lot of fun.
Cool.
So I kind of decided to bring it over. And so I'm still kind of on the time frame of September to launch this. People who really wanted to, it's not private, so people who really wanted to could probably find it. So I'm on a path to launch it in September. I've talked a lot about the plan for a paid section of the site, and that's kind of, I don't know how much that's going to factor in. We'll see. I think I've simplify was the word in my brain this whole last half of the summer in terms of simplify workflows, simplify, what I'm doing with my website, things like that.
It makes a really big difference. I mean, just in terms of your own happiness, you know, like when I got this iPad earlier in the year, you know, I was confronted with the fact that, like, okay, this is a device I'm probably going to want to port around. And I, you know, I had started using IMAP for my email and I was like, okay, you know, so I spent time and all of my devices now use the same IMAP account. So wherever I am, I'm managing the same set of email, which was a good first step. But then it was like, how do I get my documents so that they're everywhere all the time? And I basically just wanted to create a system so that whatever device of mine I'm using, I'm dealing with the exact same set of content and everything is accessible. And I've more or less achieved that. And it's made a really big difference because I don't feel like, oh, I have to get home because this is a task I can only do at home. You know, like it's surprising how much that frees you up to just be like, okay, I can just work with what I have. And it makes a really big difference, I find.
Yeah. One thing I've realized just in the last day or so is sometimes my desire to simplify gets in the way of that desire of wanting everything to be easy. So like I had pared down the applications on my phone way, way down. And what I realized is, yes, I don't need to have all of these things on there on a regular basis. I don't use them that often.
Right.
But for instance, I get an attachment in my email from one of my students. And now the workflow traditionally has been wait till I get home, save it to my downloads folder, and then work with it from there. Whereas if I have an application on my phone that can open that document and save it into a place that is also accessible on my computer, then why not make the workflow, I get it on my phone, I tap it to open it, it goes over to the word processor, and it's going to be there ready for me when I get back to my computer, if that's where I'm going to work on it.
Yeah.
You know,
Dropbox really helps in situations like that, actually. Yeah.
It's a pretty fantastic system. I kind of like sit there and think, how did we get by with multiple devices before something like that existed?
Back in the dark ages of like 2008. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's true. And like stuff like Xmarks, which syncs my bookmarks cross-browser, and LastPass I use for, you use KeePass?
OnePassword.
OnePass, yeah. So, yeah, things like that are super useful. Yeah, it's nice. And Instapaper. Actually, signing up for Instapaper, sending everything to that Instapaper account has saved me so much time. Like my Google Reader device, device applications, all have Instapaper support, and yeah, it's nice. 'Cause then I'm never like, oh, where did I put that link?
Yeah. And it's actually making me reconsider how I really oversimplified the number of websites I subscribe to the RSS of, because it was getting to be too much to keep track of all that. But now my workflow there has become, I use Flipboard on my phone and on. So my workflow is, if I see an article I want to read, I send it over to Instapaper, and that way I'm able to fly through the headlines. And I'm like, if it's something to read and it's going to take more than 30 seconds, it goes to Instapaper.
It's just creating new and interesting bottlenecks though, because my Instapaper is just going and going and going at this point.
Yeah, yeah, and that is the problem. And the other thing that I run into is if I put videos or things in there that are only playable on my computer. And most of the time when I'm checking my Instapaper, it's on another device. And I'm like, oh, I've got these three things that I've had on there for a week and I need to just go to the computer to look at them.
It's true. Well, yeah. So that's exciting for everybody at home. Did anything else happen this summer? You went camping.
Which I went camping.
You weren't super positive about.
I'm never super positive about it because it involves sleeping on air mattresses, which are terrible uniformly. It doesn't matter. And I get terrible sleep on them. Yeah. But no, I don't know. I mean, I think I don't know exactly what it was. There was a point at which after Grand Guignol, I got home. I didn't have as much to do. And family started to like. Family things have been tense the last year or two because I've overbooked myself.
Right.
I wrote this post on the blog about how I haven't not had a theater project lined up for the last year and a half to 2 years. There's always been something on the horizon. And so I started, you know, family stuff started to be less tense and I was like, oh, camping could be okay. And even though I didn't sleep really well, like I got to spend lots of time with the kids and now Melody is less of a challenge. So now both of them are kind of really fun to hang out with. I mean, if you're in the mood to hang out with kids,
right.
There are moments when you want to just be a grown up and you want to hang out with adults, but, you know, they're fun. And so camping was fun.
Cool.
As fun as it could be, you know, given the lack of sleep and,
well, at least you get to like build fire and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. This time, you know, the weather wasn't terrible. The last couple of years has been a lot of rain.
Yeah.
And there was no rain this camping trip until the last day, which was,
that's all right,
understandably, the most tense day because there was actually rain.
That's the day you get to pack up too. So you're like taking the tent down in the rain, which it is always awesome.
Yeah. We had the fights that day. But, you know, we got past it. Yeah, no, camping was good, and then we spent a couple days up at a lake house in Maine with my family, because camping was with Steph's family.
Uh-huh.
And it was nice. I actually left wishing I had one more day.
Wow. That's new.
Yeah.
Yeah, good for you, man. I've just been doing exciting wedding planning.
Oh.
Which involves taking Nora to, like, places to try on dresses while I hide in the corner. Because, like, seriously, like, we went to this one place and she wanted to look at the colors of a couple dresses. And so, like, there's an upstairs where there are no dressing rooms. And then there's the downstairs where there's all the dressing rooms. But the dressing rooms are, like booths, kind of, like, with curtains and stuff. And then there's, like, also a sales floor downstairs.
Right.
So the lady's like, all right, you guys just come on downstairs. And I'm like, are you sure? She's like, yeah, it's fine. Like, okay. So I went downstairs and very loudly said, okay, so I am a man and we'll just go in the corner. And hoping that would, like, you know, tip off the other girl that was in there.
Right, yeah.
No, not so much. So I spent a lot of time being super interested in my phone. I was just like, I'm just going to stare at my phone.
Gotcha.
Which was a little awkward. But yeah, so that's been fun. And we think we maybe found a place to do it. But yeah, so it's been super fun. Very manly. Yeah. Like,
it's, you know, there are certain parts of it that are cool and okay to do as a couple. And then there are other parts where I remember just like
it's the just dress the part. Stephanie went, you know. Yeah.
Stephanie went for dresses with a couple of friends of hers. And I had no part in it, which was okay with me.
Yeah, it's just kind of like, okay.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of stuff I'm going to have to do by myself, though, like, because Nora, you know, will be in Europe. And so, like, I'm going to have to go deal with catering and stuff like that on my own. And
right.
Like, I'm going to make somebody go with me. Be like, dude, just eat the food. It's free.
Yeah, just eat the food. Tell me. Is it good?
Do you like it? Are you dead? Okay. So, yeah, that's been my exciting summer. I don't know, man. Anything fun coming up?
Well, the launch of the website sometime in September.
We both get to start teaching soon, so expect regular goats at that point.
Right, yeah. I don't know, we could probably find a time we can squeeze it. We should compare schedules after we
You sure? End the show. Probably make for riveting podcasting.
Well, no, I mean after we end the show.
Oh, sure.
I don't know. The launch of the website is the most public thing I've got coming up.
Theater, huh?
Yeah. No more theater. Nothing on the horizon.
Except that play that we should write.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah. How about you? Anything?
I don't know, man. Music site should get going again in about a week. Had a little bit of a hiccup there, but that should be coming up. I get to start teaching soon, which is super fun.
Yay.
All right. Not fun at all, but it does pay the salary, so...
It does keep a roof and food and all that stuff.
And some rumblings of support and interest for songs. So might actually return someday soon. So I don't know. So far, that's about it.
Yeah, that's good. You know, it's not always great to have like 10 things going on.
No. Yeah. So we'll see if this podcast lures the waysiders out of hiding. And, out from whatever CD venue they're holed up in.
Yeah, I mean...
They got to run out of quarters at some point.
At some point. At some point. Dollar bills.
Yeah.
No. They're not that. They're more quarters to
Peters.
Yeah.
Yeah. And pleather pants. Anyway, on that note, thanks for goading. See you next time.
Thank you. See ya.
Bye.